The city council is told not to discuss a sale of JEA. They voted down a proposal to decriminalize marijuana possession, too. And the mayor asked people to send complaints about school repairs directly to him. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning and live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Lots to talk about this week, and we have our Friday Media Roundtable in studio and on deck. We're already getting your calls about this very busy week in the news. Join us. It's 549-2937. And keep listening later in the hour. We've got a live in-studio performance from singer-songwriter Emma Mosley, part of the lineup at the Sing Out Loud Festival in St. Augustine this weekend. That's ahead as well. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss a very busy news week, we welcome Dan Scanlon from the Florida Times Union. Hey, Dan.
Good morning.
Mike Mendenhall is here from the Jax Daily Record.
Morning, Melissa.
Freelance journalist Claire Goforth with us.
Good morning.
And regular contributor Charles Griggs.
Good morning.
What a foursome today. All right, guys, let's get right into it because there is so much to talk about. Everything from the mayor saying he'll pay for school repairs. To city council voting down a loosening of marijuana laws, even though polls show the vast majority of voters want that. But we're going to begin with JEA. Is the city council being muzzled? Council members were told this week by the city's attorney that they are not allowed to discuss the proposed sale of our city-owned utility or even give their opinions to constituents or anyone. Some council members have vocally expressed opposition to selling off JEA. Meanwhile, the utility says it will unseal bids from private industry suitors on October 7th, but unusually, they're not going to name any of the companies who have made offers to buy the utility. CEO Aaron Zahn is calling this a cloaked process, drawing sharp criticism once again as those opposed to the sale of the utility cite a lack of transparency and heavy-handed tactics with the city council who would oversee any sale. So we're going to begin the hour with a closer look at this. What are your thoughts about this? It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org and tweets to @MelissaInJax. Dan Scanlon, let's begin with you. It's really striking to see the city council being told they are prohibited from discussing this since they would be involved in a voter referendum that the voters would also weigh in on before JEA could be sold.
And of course, the JEA employees have been told they're not supposed to talk about this either. But that said, it is usually standard practice. If there's a bid process going on in your company, you're not supposed to talk about it with outsiders. It's a part of an ethics policy. We have the same thing. We're not supposed to talk about it at the Times Union, any pending deal that occurs. So that is not surprising. But how does a city council start talking about this process in a public meeting without breaking the rule if an audience is there and hears something that the JEA doesn't want? So I don't know.
Your own editorial writer, Nate Monroe, said in the Times Union, if the city council stands for this muzzling, it is truly a defrocked, useless institution. Mike Mendenhall, how do you think the city council will respond to this?
Well, you're already starting to see some dissent in members that you may not typically think that you might align with the mayor's office on other issues. I know Randy DeFore, Councilwoman Randy DeFore, has been very vocal of her opposition. And Councilmember Al Ferraro as well came out the other night, although he did support a bill extending pension protections for JEA employees in the event of a sale. He was quite adamant to say that he did not support it. So you are starting to see some traction in that regard. However, I've covered procurement processes in Jacksonville, and it is when a bid opens, you may not know the price tag attached to it, but it's very rare where the city doesn't say what companies are bidding.
549-2937 to join us. Charles Griggs, this isn't the first time the city has been accused of not operating in the sunshine or ignoring the will of the voters, but certainly this is one of the biggest deals that could affect this city in many decades. So what are your thoughts?
So the problem, one of the problems is that the head of JEA invoked the term cloaked. And I think that's problematic for a lot of city council members who are trying to get their arms around this process. You know, one of the things that Dan mentioned is this is they're trying to operate under a standard a procurement process. What that would say, what that really means is that all of the information that the city council would have been addressing has already occurred. You know, they've already allowed JEA to create the RFP for this potential sale, and they haven't had the proper input for that. So now they're in a procurement process and trying to find out what, you know, who the potential purchasers or buyers are, and they've sort of let that opportunity go by, thinking that at some particular point they'll have an opportunity for input. But that's not how it works in the procurement process. You don't go back and change the award after the bid has been awarded.
It's 549-2937 to join us. Claire Goforth, full disclosure, your spouse works at JEA.
Indeed he does.
And so we always want to make mention of that. Employees, as Dan said, are being told not to discuss this, along with members of the city council. The people that have a greater than average stake in the outcome, although, of course, all of us as consumers of power, water, and sewer theoretically are supposed to have a say in this. There is to be a voter referendum on this, at least as of right now.
Yes, I do find it interesting that they're saying that the public employees don't no longer have their First Amendment rights in this, and I understand the unions have said they refuse to give up theirs. I was curious, though, because I believe Jason Gabriel, the general counsel, he issued that opinion that said that the city council could not discuss this, but then later on he said it was advisory. So I'm wondering what exactly would be the repercussions if city council did start discussing this? Are they going to build some sort of jail under the office of general counsel and lock them up? Are we going to have to go to court and hold them in contempt?
Right. What would be the
reprisal
if they ignored this memo from Jason Gabriel and said, no, we're going to talk about this. We see this as part of our role as duly elected representatives.
He called it mere advice. That was actually what was in the tweet that I saw from him. Mere advice. So what? You issue the rule and then you say it's just an advisory, go your own way.
It would certainly have a chilling effect, though, for some members of the council. They might see that as, playing a role in whether they got projects for their district, money for their district, if they don't go along with what the mayor's office and the office of general counsel, who seem to be working closely together, with what they're advising.
I think it's all going to depend on the council members' particular, you know, worldview. I mean, you've got you already have some of our more vocal council members calling noticed meetings on the issue of JEA. Matt Carlucci did yesterday, and Councilmember Garrett Dennis has already filed legislation to, in the event of a possible sale, they would take city council funding and hire their own attorney and so to represent them specifically on this issue. So you're already seeing some council members kind of rebut that a little
sort
bit.
Sort of pushing,
yeah,
back.
Pushing back.
It's unusual to see that, Charles, with Mayor Curry's administration, any real vocal pushback from this city council.
Yeah, and it is. And I think that this is such a sticky situation, especially after they've set a standard with how they've handled the half-cent sales tax for, you know, requiring additional information, that this situation begs the question, why aren't we able to get answers now as this process is proceeding? In particular, one of the major concerns for the council members is a standard practice is to identify bidders once the bids are unsealed. That's a standard practice. And why aren't we able to find out who they are once the bids are unsealed? So they're looking for some clarification, and the public as well, is why is it that we can't find out who the bidders are once the bids are unsealed?
And let's keep in mind, too, that polling on this shows that overwhelmingly the public is opposed to the privatization of this utility. When JEA CEO Aaron Zahn appeared on this program earlier this summer, he refused to answer repeated questions from me about whether privatization was on the table. About a month after he appeared, privatization suddenly became on the table.
I was going to say, I think we should also recall that in the summer of 2018, the mayor said unequivocally that he was not going to submit legislation to sell JEA. And also at that time, Shad Khan was quoted by, I believe, one of member of city council as being completely against this idea. So we have the public against it. We have one of the largest you know, biggest names in town, Shad Khan, against it. And then we have city council, who's effectively been given a gag order of sorts, or an advice to not run their mouths. I think that these members of city council should think long and hard about the fact that they're first termers, many of them, many of the ones who are seen as close allies of the mayor. They're going to be facing the voters again, and they will be answering questions about this.
Yeah, I don't think they really care about that. I think this, you know, for 3 years of, you know, 3.5 years away from another election, they feel like politicians all the time feel like they can weather that storm when the times come, because the way this county is divided up so much in our council districts, you know, you've got a lot of people. We didn't really have any highly contested. I think we had like two highly contested races, and that was about it. Everything was, you know, pretty much, money kind of sort of decided who was going to win that race. But under this circumstance, this has the potential to live for a long time.
This is one of those rare issues that could
And it cuts across
shift the ground a little
as well.
Bit.
This is a little different than the districts, the school districts have some sales tax piece.
And we will have new districts then. We have the census coming up, and we'll be redrawing districts.
And with the people's voices out there saying they don't want this, the specter of some kind of legal action, if this thing goes through, could stall this for some period of time. And then, indeed, you are up for re-election. And some of these new council members are brand new politicians. They've not done this before. So,
Mike.
Yeah. And so, I mean, and I think that JEA is trying to get out in front of any pushback from city council, or at least trying to appease them with Danny Becton, a council member who is currently the JEA liaison. They announced this week that they're going to have him provide some type of oversight in the procurement process, but they didn't really define what that was or how much information he was going to get. And that also presents a danger that if the final vote to sell JEA is close, will Becton's additional information compromise his vote?
If you're just tuning in, it's 549-2937 to join the show this Friday. Our media roundtable is on deck, and we're talking about the next steps JEA is taking to sell to a private operator. This week, we learned that the Jacksonville City Council has been told they can't even discuss this, and that we will not learn who the potential bidders are. That's being cloaked from the public, too. What do you think about that? 549-2937. Larry is on the west side. Hey, Larry, good morning.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday and all that.
You too.
I want to try to stay upbeat as much as I can. And, you know, I hope I don't come over too negative.
That's okay.
I believe the mayor has already gotten his marching orders, and I think this is a done deal. So make sure you archive this so you can play it back later. I think it's a done deal. It's kind of sad, though. I was talking to the lady that answered the phone. The citizens in Jacksonville, I've been here since 94, and the citizens in Jacksonville seem like they're just so laid back and subservient. This mayor, apparently he's getting his marching orders from Tallahassee or somebody. If you sell the utility, JEA, he's throwing the citizens in Jacksonville under the bus. I mean, look around the country. You know, you need to keep that just like it is, public. And you go private, you know, and get all these investors in here and all that. I'm telling you, you really, really, you're going to get a bad deal here. But I think it's already a done deal. That's sad. I don't know.
Okay, Larry. Thanks for that. Thank you for that. Okay. The perception among cynical observers of our local politics, they think it's a done deal.
Yeah, they do think it's a done deal, and that's not without merit, because a lot of issues that have come before citizens here have been unpopular, in the community, yet have been acted upon by our political stakeholders. So, we'll be talking about
the
criminalization issue shortly. But no matter how much we hear from the citizens in the community, a lot of these stakeholders or elected officials believe that this is an issue they can move past once time gives them enough, sits in and people aren't thinking about it. You know, Jacksonville is a wonderful community. I mean, we have, like the caller said, we have a lot of people who are living having great lives here. And some of these issues don't touch them on a daily basis. But this may be one where folks kind of look up and say, hey, you know, this is going to change things. This is going to be a dynamic that changes things for the long term. And the trend has been for communities to want to have their public utilities owned, by the public and not to sell those. A lot of communities are trying to get their privatized utilities back.
That's true. We have seen that around the country. Javon is on the line. Javon, you're on the air.
Good morning. So if JEA is a nonprofit or owned by the public, right now it sounds like it's being operated in bad faith. If the citizens say they don't want to sell, but the mayor's office and the board of JEA is operating as if a sale is imminent or is something they want to seek, what is the recourse for citizens to, I guess, throw the bums out, essentially? Why not get a new board to run JEA and operate in good faith consistent with what people want?
Javon, thanks for that. We have a strong mayor form of government in this city. Mayor Curry, when he was elected in his first term, one of the first things he did was purge boards and commissions of people that he perhaps thought would not be loyal to his agenda. And he installed people of his own choosing, including on the JEA board. This caused a lot of flap at the time. It was seen as overly partisan, overly harsh. Those board terms were staggered for a reason, so as to be independent from the whims of any differing mayoral administration. However, he didn't face any real consequences for doing that. And so now, as he's into his second term, this is perhaps the most consequential outcome of Curry stacking boards with people that he wanted, because the JEA board is accountable now, theoretically, to the constituents and the customers, but they were all appointed by this mayor. And so what about that?
I think that the opponents of selling JEA, they're going to come up against more than just policy. They're going to be coming up against legacy. Mayor Curry, he could be making the calculation that, that in the long run, his term in office will be defined by this sale. And he's promised several times that you won't recognize downtown. He talks about how he's put more money into the city's CIP for capital projects and to leave office, effectively wiping the debt and possibly putting more money into neighborhoods. I think he's willing to take that, and he has the ear of many people on the city council. So they're kind of up against this idea of legacy.
Yeah, it is true. The mayor is trying to leave probably the largest legacy in history. I mean, he wants to make a stamp on Jackson, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with wanting to lead from way out front and be bold and to make significant changes to the community that you think are in the community's best interest. Jake Godbo's claim to fame obviously was to be the cheerleader to get the Jaguars here. Mm-hmm. And, to bring the Jacksonville Landing. That was a dynamic shift in how Jacksonville was seen across the country. And like I said, there's nothing wrong with the mayor trying to work towards a real legacy for building and changing the shape of Jacksonville. The problem is that in our society today, if there's real pushback, you have to want to have input and listen to the citizens as well. And I think that a lot of people feel like their voices aren't being heard. And if he can do a better job of that, I think if someone said it before, why don't we just come out and say what we're trying to do instead of just
make the case to the
make
public,
the case
in
to
other
the public
words.
And people probably would buy in. They probably go for it.
Dave at the beaches. What are your thoughts, Dave?
Good morning, Melissa. It's a great conversation because, frankly, Aaron Zahn has got the cart before the horse. He's on the record as saying that after he gets a deal negotiated, then he'll go to city council and ask them for policy support. The harsh reality is that city council should be setting policy today. So city council needs to get a backbone, stand up to this unelected board, and tell JEA that to stop the procurement until the city council has the opportunity to publicly vet the policy framework that would guide the marketplace. The marketplace does not set policy. This is fundamental capitalism 101. The government sets the policy, and the only governing board for JEA that is elected is the city council. The board members are unelected, as are the employees. Something this big, this is not like hiring a janitor or even building a power plant. This is a big deal, and the RFP is so broadly written that it basically is wired for one thing, and that is selling the whole damn utility and putting $3 billion in city coffers and ignoring everything else. There's no opportunity for local entrepreneurs to get into this game and propose innovative solutions. This is an all-or-nothing deal, and frankly, JEA got the cart before the horse. City Council needs to get some backbone, step up, and tell Aaron Zahn what the policy framework is that he has to work with, and then let him try to figure out how to solve the problem. He made some statements.
All right, Dave, yeah.
Procurement,
Dave, those
that
are you. I think you summed it up perfectly, at least in terms, thank you, Dave, in terms of those who are concerned about what they see happening. This is on the city council now.
It is. And I think that one of the things that people need to watch are the markets. The other thing at stake is a $72.2 million downtown headquarters. This week, JEA and Ryan Companies, who will be developing their new downtown headquarters, actually extended the deadline to the end of October to when JEA can pull out of that deal. So and the city has said you have until December 31st to break ground. If that deal falls through, that's going to send a signal that this sale could possibly be imminent.
Lots of people waiting on hold to weigh in on this. Stay on the line. We're going to take a quick pause and tell you how you can support this public radio station and then keep the discussion going.
And, of course, you can support this program and all the great programs right here on 89.9 by calling 904-353-9528. I'm David Luckin here with David McGowan, and we are sitting here listening to this program like you are, and as usual, enlightening and educational. And, of course, we're including your calls. So don't call us right now for the show. Call us instead to show your financial support at 353-9528.
And another special invitation to those who may be listening in the evening at the 8 o'clock repeat. Now I'm talking to my people, because that's
there
usually when I listen to the show. You know, I'm a big fan during the week of the Fresh Air First Coast Connect doubleheader that we have,
every night.
Maybe you're cooking dinner. Maybe you're having a glass of wine after a long day, whatever it is. The perfect way. Right, to stay informed, to unwind. If you're one of those people, please give us a call right now. It's not too late. This is our last day, but First Coast Connect repeat, not too late. 904-353-9528.
Whether it's the morning or night, First Coast Connect, every day bringing you the news you need to know and also letting you participate in asking the newsmakers the important questions that you have on your mind. 353-9528. We want to thank everyone who's called during this pledge drive. We're going to wrap it up today, but it's not too late for you to invest in this, your public radio station, right now at 353-9528.
And we really need your help. This is the time to do it, right? Don't depend on your neighbor. Don't depend on that person in the car next to you, that person in the cubicle next to you. Do it right now. And don't forget, WJCT.org is another place to give.
Very easy. We'll send you back to Melissa Ross here in about 10, 15 seconds. But make that phone call now. We thank you so much for your support. We couldn't do it without you. It's because of you. We're here every day. 353-9528.
All right. Thank you for that, guys. And our media roundtable is fired up and ready to go, along with lots of callers, as we talk about the biggest stories of the week. We've been talking about whether or not the Jacksonville City Council will push back on a rapidly escalating process to sell JEA. They've been told they can't discuss it publicly. We've been told that we will not be allowed to see who the bidders are to potentially buy JEA, whether it would be Florida Power and Light, Duke Energy, someone else. As all of this is being discussed, Mike Mendenhall, something just pinged on your phone, some news here.
Yeah, so it appears on Monday, Councilwoman Brenda Priestley-Jackson and Councilwoman Randy DeFore are going to be meeting with the City Council President Scott Wilson to discuss the City Council's role in JEA, with the cone of silence, it's kind of unclear as to still what they're allowed to talk about together. But there's clearly concern amongst both sides of the aisle in this process.
So we'll follow that. Meanwhile, lots of feedback from our listeners. Here are a few emails. Here's one. Are the voters going to ultimately have a say in the sale of our utility? If so, the cart is before the horse with all these machinations going on behind the scenes. Here's a comment on our Facebook page. The bottom line is the process is backwards. They should be going to the people first with a referendum of whether or not they want to explore selling. If the people say yes, then do your cloaked bidding process. But from day one, this has appeared to the public as a top-down driven action with zero transparency. This isn't 1919, it's 2019. No more smoke-filled back rooms. Here's an email from MG. Can this mayor be impeached? Mm-hmm. And here is another email from Scott. I just moved here 6 months ago, and I've been listening to this JEA discussion on your show. From the Okie that is new to town, my observation is that you all have a crook for a mayor, and you need to do something about it quick.
There are a lot of people, remember the last round of this, how many people showed up for the city council meetings? I mean, that place was packed with people, and I mean, I would say it was 98% people against the sale. And then we had a referendum, the straw poll, and people were against the sale. And then city council changed the city charter so that it requires a voter referendum to approve it. And yet here we are all over again, in spite of promises, in spite of so many people being against it. And it just gives a look of complete lack of transparency and potential sunshine law issues.
We're getting tweets, too, about JEA making changes on its website, calling this not a sale, but a capitalization event. They also took language on their website about the benefits of public power down. So that's been happening as well.
And, you know, the JEA has been tweeting a lot of lovely, flowery, positive messages of late, and it all seems to grow when there's some griping amongst folks about this process. They're trying to counterbalance. And again, you can't but see how we've seen an increase in FPL ads on our local cable channels. Mm-hmm. They're really pushing.
And as one of you said a moment ago, if it makes sense financially for Jacksonville to sell off JEA, immediately get billions of dollars in its coffers that could be used to pay down debt, do some interesting projects, then I think it was you who said this, Charles, why not make that case to the voters and explain this is why this is happening, this is what we want to do with the money, and this is why we think it would be better for the city.
And I think that's one of the biggest problems is that when you make the case, it's about more than just how much value you're going to get for the sale of JEA. Equally as important is what you're going to do with the money. And I don't think much of the public is concerned about what would happen with the money.
And let me jump in, because we need to disclose that you, Charles Griggs, are a member of the Charter Revision Commission. On Facebook, a listener is saying, ask Charles if that commission can demand that JEA attend the next notice meeting. What about the role of the I don't think it's anything that your group is getting into, but we want to disclose that.
No, actually, we've asked the Charter Revision Commission, as the chair, Lindsay Brock, has requested all of the heads of the independent authorities to come and address if they have any concerns about what they'd like to see changed. And Mr. Zahn has declined to come.
He's declined to attend.
And saying that he didn't see any need for any changes through the charter. We don't know if he will come. He may still come. And Chairman Brock may request that he come, but he doesn't have to come if he doesn't want to.
Okay. And lots of folks are waiting on hold to talk about JEA, and I appreciate your interest. We do have to shift gears now, though. If you want to stay online and talk about our new topic, please do so, or give us a call at 549-2937, because speaking of the city council, on Tuesday, they voted down a measure that would decriminalize small amounts of marijuana possession. Now, This bill would have allowed police officer discretion in cannabis possession arrests involving less than 20 grams. This type of loosening of marijuana laws is becoming popular around the country for a number of reasons. The council said no, though. They voted overwhelmingly not to make this change. This despite polls showing the vast majority of voters in this city, around 84%, are in favor of cannabis decriminalization, possession of small amounts. And so, Dan Scanlon, once again, critics of the city council are saying that they are not listening to their constituents on broadly popular measures like keeping JEA a public utility, like loosening small amounts of marijuana possession in a state where we already have legal medical marijuana.
Correct. And if you take a look at the jail intake login on any day, you will see a lot of possession of marijuana. Now, many of those, that's the lesser charge coming on top of anything as bad as homicide or ag battery. But there's a lot of people who are currently waiting to get picked up at the jail right now with their paper bags who spent the night in jail because of marijuana possession. So there would be a cost cutting. Now, obviously, there would have to be some kind of program to try to get people to use it more medicinally, officially, through a doctor prescription versus recreational, because that's not allowed. But yes, it there's a huge number in the jail and right now. So that's the logical part of it. Of course, there's also the DUI portion of it. If you're under the influence, you're under the influence, and it could be dangerous as a driver.
Claire.
You know, it is interesting to see the city council go so completely against the will of the people and ignore the national trend. We're seeing states that are legalizing marijuana, and there's talk about it on the federal level. Even one of Florida's most closest allies of the president, Congressman Matt Gaetz, he is a proponent of decriminalization. This is an issue that has bipartisan support. And when you look at the real world impacts of it being illegal, you see a disproportionate effect on poor and communities of color who an officer smells something. Next thing you know, they're getting searched. Maybe there's a weapon, whatever it is. A lot of people are getting locked up for something that in another state, they could just walk into a store and buy and walk outside and do whatever they want with it. So, I mean, we need to look at the future and not the past when we talk about drug laws and policy.
And the council's rationale was they did not want to go against the wishes of JSO on this matter. That was one of the reasons that they gave for voting this proposal down. Mike and Charles.
Well, and JSO, I mean, they've kind of, considering the amount of violent crime that they're currently are facing here in Jacksonville, I mean, you know, you also have to consider, like, you know, is possession of a small amount of marijuana worth a deputy's time when there's a lot of other, like, violent crime issues that we're facing here in Jacksonville?
Yeah, and some of the other excuses was, I mean, that Council President Scott Wilson said his concern was that some of the stuff may be laced with fentanyl. This is, you know, that's probably a reach in most cases, people thought.
You're being very kind to say probably.
Well, you know, it's his opinion. So, you know, we want to give him just the benefit of his opinion. But when you have the opportunity to do small things that could reduce the stress and strain on our criminal justice system, you should take them.
And if there is an officer's discretion in this, if this were to have passed, then the officer could still use that as the basis to then bring a dog in and do a search and potentially find other stuff. So the discretion part would have been in there to still allow.
Yes.
Let's go to Michael in San Marco now. Hi, Michael. Good morning.
Hey, Melissa. How are you?
Okay, thanks.
I lived in Cambridge, Massachusetts, when they decriminalized in the Boston area, and the people who benefited the most, and they would told me to my face, were the police officers. They would find a group of people, you know, smoking a joint or something in public and say, look, it's a $10 ticket. And they would say, you know, they graciously took the ticket, didn't go on your record. And the cops would say, you know what?
We lost him a little. Oh, there you are, Michael. Right. And yeah, I take your point. Go ahead.
When the money all went to the school lunch program, and it's now a fully funded program that uses locally raised foods. So, and the cops loved it because they're like, I don't get burdened with something that's going to get thrown out by somebody who has the means to, when someone who doesn't then clogs up our system for something as petty as technically most states are considering a medicine now.
Thanks for that, Michael. And so he just laid out essentially the case for making this change, which a number of other cities have done. And as you pointed out, Claire, Jacksonville is bucking the trend of decriminalization, not throughout the nation, but also Florida. And some prominent Florida Republicans are speaking out in favor of it as well. So our city council is really an outlier now on this issue.
It certainly is. I mean, remember years past, many people would travel to Amsterdam specifically because certain substances were legal there that were not legal in the states. That we actually see increases in tourism. Marijuana tourism is a thing. Maybe we should pitch it to Visit Jacksonville, and maybe they could carry that water for the voters of the city.
I mean, just think of it, really, to JSO's credit, they use the discretion all the time with many other issues. And so this would just be another tool in the toolbox. And I understand that. If some people consider this to be a slippery slope, but we're in a time now where this isn't worth the hassle in many cases.
Daryl is in St. Augustine. Hi, Daryl. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks. And good show. Both subjects. I've asked this question before. How much money does JSO and the justice system make from the arrest of a citizen? Because they're billing the taxpayer for the jail. They're billing the jail's making money. The lawyers are making money. The bail bondsmen are making money. The reason JSO is not supporting this is because this is a revenue stream for them. And when you say, oh, well, it costs money. Yeah, but they just bill the taxpayer for it. So we're paying for them to arrest people who are smoking a joint. And the lawyers, like I said, everybody's making money from this, except the poor kid who gets killed, who gets arrested for a joint and can't get a job anymore. That's turns him into a liability instead of an asset.
All right, Daryl, thanks for that. Okay, Dan Scanlon, you want to weigh in on that?
A lot of these people who are arrested end up with a public defender, so that's more money that the taxpayer has to pay, so that's not a private attorney getting any money. The jail is pretty close to capacity, so I'm sure that is a money loser right there, plus the city would like to eventually build a new jail, so that's more money the taxpayer has to pay. So I don't think there's a lot of money coming from the hundreds of people on the misdemeanor drug possession charges.
I think his frustration stems from the perception that we, the taxpayers, are footing the bill for these prosecutions, Mike Mendenhall, when they don't necessarily result in a safer community.
Yeah, and I also think too that the part of the it's a cultural shift too that tends to take time. I know certain areas of the country have adopted these types of measures quicker than others. In my home state of Iowa, about 3 years ago, they finally decided to legalize or to have medicinal marijuana, but they wouldn't allow residents to obtain it in the state. And then people pushed back, and then they allowed it to be obtained in the state. But then they were talking about the percentage of THC. So I mean, it's just a slow trickle as this cultural effect kind of moves forward.
Braun is on the west side. Hi, Braun. What are your thoughts about marijuana decriminalization?
I think it's something that should have been done a long time ago. But my concern was, I wanted to mention that they changed the rules probably about a year ago, where you can't get a medical marijuana card unless you meet very specific criteria. So a lot of the people who have chronic pain or back issues or things like that, they can't get cards anymore. So until Florida goes recreational or until, the whole United States goes nationally legal, it's preventing a large portion of people from being able to go legal. And so I think the decriminalization within our city would be a great idea, because there are a lot of people getting arrested for nothing that, I wouldn't get arrested, but if I didn't have that card, I'd be in jail. So it would be, beneficial, I think, definitely on the financial side. And it would also be beneficial for the people, because they're not really doing anything wrong anymore, per se, most of them, and they shouldn't be punished for that. Well, I'll put my comment off the air.
Thanks for that, Braun.
Yeah, it is fair to say that there is a legitimate concern about abuse, just as you are with alcohol and prescription drugs. But if done right, and people mistake the term decriminalization for legal, And that's not the case here. Decriminalization only means that you're downgrading what the enforcement tactic would be for a specific amount of marijuana. So what people are concerned about is guarding against abuse and what that abuse would look like and how would you measure that. But at the same time, there is a legitimate argument for downgrading or decriminalizing the use of marijuana in our community when you have other areas that, you know, such as alcohol and prescription drugs where you can measure and you have also limitations on how they can be used.
Leah is in the town center area. Hi, Leah. Good morning. Go ahead.
Oh, hey. How you doing?
Good.
So, like 2 or 3 years ago, I was pulled over, and I had my husband with me, who actually is not a resident here. He is in Atlanta. And we had marijuana on us, and they let me go because they told me I'm a resident, and they had that choice. They arrested him for it, and he, by the way, wasn't even the driver.
So
I just think it's interesting.
Right. So police officers can already exercise some discretion is what
exactly.
You're saying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they told me only with Florida residents.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Thanks for that, yeah, that little anecdote.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Leah.
That is interesting. I did want to point out before we conclude the topic that there's one entity that would love for marijuana to remain illegal, and that's the drug cartels. It's the illegal trade. They're the ones profiting off it being illegal. It's not going to go away. That's just a fact. I mean, and there's a voter referendum. They're collecting ballot signatures. We may be voting on it as a state soon. And Jacksonville will be drug kicking and screaming into the present.
Well, and how about the fact, too, that the chief proponent of this on the city council is Garrett Dennis, who's frequently been at odds with Mayor Curry. He's a lone voice often on the city council. If someone else had proposed this, perhaps it might have a little more support. I don't know, but that is one factor.
Yeah, many people do believe that politics does play a role in this or has been playing a role in this. And if it was any other council member or someone who may have been less adversarial to the administration, we may have been able to see some progress here.
Yeah.
This is also an opportunity for council members to come together, right, and figure out a way to move beyond those political differences in order to do the best thing for the community.
And finally, after discussing all of these vast differences in this community that have divided so many people, something we can all agree on, Minshew Mania. That's right. Gardner Minshew this week finally got to meet Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite, and fans around the world were thrilled. Did you see this, guys? The former Washington State star has often been compared to Uncle Rico, the fictional character from Napoleon Dynamite. They have a similar looking mustache. And of course, Uncle Rico said he could throw a football over the mountains. Well, Uncle Rico was in town yesterday to shoot a commercial for the NFL Network that will air this Sunday, and the two football pros got to meet each other. Uncle Rico is actually played by actor John Grease. He even had breakfast at the Waffle House in Jacksonville Beach and showed up at the stadium at TIA Bank Field in his signature orange van from the movie. So there's this picture now of Minshew and Uncle Rico online. They've got their arms around each other and they're sporting those stashes in all their glory. Check it out. Jeez. And well, I'm looking forward to the commercial this weekend. Are you guys?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Very much.
It'll be so cute. Okay, well, and thank you for a lively discussion. Mike Mendenhall from the Daily Record, Dan Scanlon from the TU, journalist Claire Goforth, and regular contributor Charles Griggs. Thanks, guys, so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
In a moment, don't miss it as we have a special treat, a live performance from Emma Mosley. Stay with us.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. Our most basic instinct is to protect our families. Safety belts and properly installed child seats do that. They prevent injuries and deaths.
Learn more at waynehogan.law.
Cypress Village, a continuing care retirement community, features resort lifestyle amenities which allow residents to remain active and vibrant. The new alternative to long-term care insurance, 901-4004. More at lifecare.brookdale.com.
An impeachment inquiry gets underway. I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
This Friday, as House Speaker Nancy Pelosi calls for the start of an impeachment inquiry into President Trump, we'll take a closer look at what that means here in Florida, a swing state with coveted electoral votes.
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Friday at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Ira Flatow. This week on Science Friday, what's in your beverage? Are you imbibing elderberries or sipping Szechuan peppercorn? How about tasting tree resin? A bevy of botanists wants to change the way you experience the flavors of plants and get you invested in biodiversity along the way. It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon at 3 here on 89.9 WJCT.
What just happened?
This is all wrong.
It's all a hoax.
It's deeply troubling.
Speaker Pelosi happens to be the Speaker of this House.
No one is above the law.
But she does not speak for America when it comes to this issue.
It's been a historic week, and events are still moving fast. We'll take a breath and explain the what and the why on the Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
And welcome back to First Coast Connect. We'll take a quick break here, and then we're going to have some music. If you enjoyed the program today, it's time to call us and show your financial support. David McGowan is here, our CEO. We've just got a minute and a half to get you to the phones because it's that important.
It is, David. And I'm here in the studio this morning because it's our last chance, really, for you to come in and do your part and support this really important program. We talked earlier in the show about how this was our flagship public affairs program, about how it's our most expensive program, but also how it's our most valuable program. If it's valuable to you, now is really the time to show it, right? 904-353-9528 or WJCT.org. We got a big banner at the bottom of the webpage. All you got to do is go there and click it. Do it right now, please.
If you become a sustainer, it's just $10 a month. That's so easy. It'll come right out of your account. You won't even miss it, and it will help us provide the great programming you've come to expect from us for the last 47 years on the radio side. 353-9528. It's so important you give us a call because this is our end of the year. We're literally down to the last day.
And you know, if you're a sustainer already and you think we're not talking to you, actually, please think hard about whether or not you can increase your gift, right? When we look at our budget, we know our expenses from NPR next year are going up 3%. If you're giving us $10 a month already, we really, really appreciate it. But think if you can go to 11, because we need to find a way to cover that 3%, David.
And if you've never participated before, invested in this, your public radio station, maybe you've just moved to Jacksonville, well, your old membership doesn't come with you. If you came here from Michigan or New York or anywhere else, whatever you gave to your old NPR station stays there. So if you're new to the community, excuse me, we are your public media station. Give us a call, and we're just 20 seconds away of going back to the program. So take the time now to show your support for First Coast Connect, Melissa and Heather and Michelle and all the folks who put this show together every day with a lot of effort to keep you well-informed and part of your community.
We're here because of you.
353-9528, because of you, as David said. We couldn't do it without you. So we will send you back to the program now, and thank you for your support.
Thanks, guys. And as you make that call to support us, we're going to give you a special treat right now. It's local singer-songwriter Emma Mosley. She'll be performing at the Sing Out Loud Festival tomorrow night in St. Augustine. This is a free concert. It's taking place at 7 p.m. at Colonial Oak. We are so excited to have a preview right now here in studio. Hey, Emma, good morning.
Good morning.
So what are you going to be singing for us?
I'm singing an original. This one is called Victory Garden. I wrote this one recently, working on a new album. And yeah, it's called Victory Garden.
And here she is, Emma Mosley.
Thank you.
now, even though I know we're met now. You could see I ask for everything, like diamonds on my wedding rings. And I've been thinking about loving you in the shining lights of the old bar rooms, smoked my drinks and drew up new tattoos. Do you think I get the party? For now, planting my victory garden, and I think I'll leave here with you tonight. That night, never thought I'd make it out alive. Learning my loyalty, yeah. Come by it honestly.
Keep singing. Oh my gosh, you're so good. That's Emma Mosley, a preview of her concert tomorrow night at the Sing Out Loud Festival in St. Augustine. Beautiful. Keep going. Keep going. Gorgeous. Emma Mosley, everybody. Wow. So talented. Thank you, Emma.
Thank you so much.
Again, that's singoutloudfestival.com. Go check it out this weekend. That's a free festival in St. Augustine. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.